So to establish a coherent and satisfying theodicy, however, we must return to a countercultural theology grounded in Scripture. Oh, man, we're going back to the old ways.
Yeah.
All right.
Back to the future.
Yeah. It strips away the assertions of modern and postmodern speculation about the nature of God. The revisionist God will not do. And he has a really good just breakdown in here that that even the footnotes I've highlighted in some sections because they're just really good. Yeah, I mean, as Christensen comes out as a preacher in the later half of this chapter here. And nowhere has the revisionist God flourished more greatly than in the evangelicism, which David Wells has chronicled so painfully and thoroughly. He laments, and here's the quote, "The fundamental problem in the evangelical world today is that God rests too inconsequentially upon the church. His truth is too distant. His grace is too ordinary. His judgment is too benign. His gospel is too easy. And his Christ is too common." Wow. So you just invite everyone in. We're all having a potluck. Right. Live your best life now. It's about health, wealth, prosperity. That's where we want to be. We want no pain. If God were to tell us to move, it's so that we can get greater wealth out of it. That's what we want to do. We want to have ease and zero pain. Minus all the things that you read in Scripture. And again, I go back to Lord of the Rings on this. No one wants to read that book where the eagles come at the beginning and go, why do we love so much that storyline? Why do we read these stories of even Beowulf and this overcoming, the witch or Arthurian legend where, his best friend betrays him? We like that kind of turn. Because it's through that we see the characters of the characters come out.
Yeah, yeah. And so the question is, does God stand at our beck and call, right? Which we, modern Christianity seems to suggest, right? Is it his responsibility to prevent or even remove evil to restore our personal tranquility, right? If so, if that's the case, if that's what God is supposed to do, he's failed. He says, now he doesn't wish to somehow minimize or trivialize suffering, but as long as the problem of evil is viewed from this anthropomorphic perspective, he says, we will pursue answers that do not satisfy, answers that will cast us deeper into the pit, answers that will restrict our gaze with regard to gazing at God. And he kind of in here levels a brief criticism even of C.S. Lewis, right? He says even C.S. Lewis's way of framing the problem of evil kind of betrays this, right? And he likes to assume that it's unintentionally. here's how C.S. Lewis frames it here. The man-centered shift that evangelicals have so easily absorbed into our distorted brand of modern theism. Recall that Lewis said, if God were good, he would wish to make his creatures perfectly happy. And if God were almighty, he would be able to do what he wished. But the creatures are not happy, therefore God lacks either goodness or the power or both. And he says here that this assumes that God exists for us instead of existing for himself, right? Does God, does he exist for us or do we exist for him, really is the question, right?
Right.
And so he says, as long as the problem of evil is viewed from this perspective, then we lose the power that we can have in trusting in God. If evil coexists with a God of unfathomable glory, he tells us, then it can in no way diminish that glory.
So that's why he tells us to return to Scripture to see if this is the God who reveals himself, let's see what he reveals so that we're not taking C.S. Lewis or Tolkien or whoever it might be of the idea of, hell is just a lock cage from the inside and you can always get out, but they never do. Let's more go with Scripture and what's presented to us through special revelation than what we have of kind of this wishful thinking, because it seems to have perversed us down this road into kind of this false intellectualism of I've thought of God, and if I were God, I wouldn't have done this, and we see this in nature, therefore God doesn't exist.
Right. And so,
congratulations, yeah. You're a terrible God.
Yeah. And so clearly, then somehow he says if this is the type of God that really does exist, this God of glory, then somehow evil must serve in some way to highlight God's glory, right? And so he ends the chapter on that particular